Welcome once again the guest, the chief guest, the guest of honor in this inaugural ceremony. Once again, thank you so much for this conference and thank you so much for coming as well.
Professor G.S. Bajpayee, Registrar, National University of Law, Delhi, sir, has had various positions at the Indian Institute of Public Administrative Bureau of Police Research and Development, Punjab Police Academy, Department of Technology and Forensic Science, etc. Sir has pursued his postdoctoral study from Department of Technology, Leicester University, UK. As a significant achievement, sir has worked as a co-principal investigator of the MHRD UGC EPG Paathshala project and led the creation of online e-text and video lectures for PG courses in law. Professor Bajpayee is a recipient of GP Pad Award for writing a book on HR and police and was awarded the Professor S. Srivastava Award for excellence. Sir is also the president of Indian Society of Victimology. Thank you, sir, for taking time out of your busy schedule. We request you kindly to deliver the keynote address.
Hello, very good morning to all of you. And I am so pleased to be here today. And I really wanted to come to this institute because I have heard a lot about WIPS and you are really doing great. So my congratulations and my good wishes to all your efforts that you are doing under the leadership of your dean, Professor Rashmi. And I'm so pleased to be in this elite club today, the dignitaries on the dais for this very, very important seminar that you are organizing today. And frankly, I'm here today because of the theme of this conference. Otherwise, I have really reduced my participation to the program significantly. So time and again, when I find that some subject being debated is really good, then I try to really come. And thanks to Professor Rashmi that she has facilitated me to come here and share some of my, you know, reflection on this particular topic, which is very close to my liking. Friends, it is very challenging to talk about this theme, especially in a very short duration. But then I decided to really focus on a couple of issues which may place the whole idea into a context, and that too from the perspective of a law student. Because our entire training as a law student is a very unidimensional, where we have mostly our engagement is one-dimensional, in the sense that our reliance is predominantly on the normative aspect of the law, where our learning remains restricted to understand the rhetoric of the law. Now, this theme allows me to take you to the reality of the law. So from rhetoric of the law to the reality of the law. Because when law is contextualized, then its entire interaction becomes so fascinating. And since you have added the dimension of behavior here, behavior means you are looking at the operation of law vis-a-vis people, vis-a-vis human being. It means you are trying to contextualize the law in terms of its application with respect to the human behavior. Then the entire discussion and the entire discourse becomes very, very illuminating. So my paper is basically about the interaction of law with people and their behavior, their compliance. So I said the compliance, conformity, deviance, and resistance. These are some important outcomes which are noticeable when law is applied to the people. So what happens is when law is applied, it may result into conformity. those who are the student of sociology, they would understand the meaning of conformity. There is an entire school of thought in sociology. So if you see the structural, you know, school of thought in sociology, they contemplate or they anticipate the citizen, the people in the society to be conformist. Means they are identifying with the norms or the law in the society. But conformity is an ideal. It is an ideal situation. Because 100% people may not get into the conformity. So therefore, we find the opposite of the conformity, which is the deviance. And deviance is a kind of regular happening in the society. Not all people conform to the law. Therefore, they are on the deviant side. And this is very interesting to note. Why people conform and why people deviate. This is extremely important. And also some people resist. So a law is promulgated, it doesn't mean that it is readily accepted. There would always be people around who would try to put up their resistance to the application of law. We need to understand every aberration or infraction of law is a behavior. That's why I always say, in law, the problem of the definition of crime is very limited. When we say crime is a violation of law, now it doesn't convey. I always say that crime is a conflict. Crime is a conflict. So many people are not in a position to conform to the law for whatever reason. So they enter into a conflicting relationship with law. Why people behave so? The seminal question why human beings behave the way they do. I am reminded of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud says, the most mysterious thing on the earth is human behavior. Even the person who is indulging in a particular behavior may not have enough rationale to define why he has done so. And Freud says nothing is uncaused. And this is fantastic. So when we try to engage into the definition of a law-violating behavior, if we simply dismiss it saying that it is the violation of law, we are in fact discounting the entire debate and discourse and putting it to a very lower pedestal. This is the issue. And therefore I understand, and therefore I appreciate that this interaction of law with human behavior. So our courses are typically structured to teach law and not the interaction of law with human behavior. And therefore, you find yourself quite deficient at number of times, especially when the application part of the law figures. Younger students are there. I would say that the government seeks to regulate or influence the behavior of individual and organization through a variety of ways. Policies are formulated, sanctions are declared, taxes are levied, legislations are created, regulations are brought in. All these instrumentalities are provided to shape the human conduct to a certain degree of acceptance. But what we find that we think the human beings are passive recipient of law, which is not the case. Let us understand that human beings are being governed by the thesis of free will. Now, free will is a very classical expression which we find in Beckerian and Benthamite traditions. And therefore, there is a kind of a little metamorphosis that we note in the realm of abnormal psychology or psychology are the principles governing the human behavior. They say that it is the issue of rational choice model. Rational choice model is something which is very interesting because they say that the behavioral change theory that underlines much public policy is the rational choice model, which assumes people rationality seeks to maximize their welfare. So people assess the choices before them in terms of cost and benefit. So even when people choose to violate a particular law, they always calculate the cost and benefit because human being is a rational person. Now this rationality ends up labeling him deviant, conformist, resisting, whatever. But the point is, it is a rational choice. Now, from this viewpoint, I think we need to understand that what is happening. I am also reminded of you. You can please excuse me, today I may not be sounding like a law person, but more of a person who is into behavioral science, because you have given me the subject, which is, you know, somehow taking me to my days when I used to teach criminal psychology. And therefore, I am now much into it, reminding myself of V.F. Skinner, who has, given a very seminal theory on, conditioning. So people's behavior is a reflection of their conditioning. And this, you know, must have heard Pavlov's experiment. You know, Pavlov's experiment on, rats and all that. So he says, your responses are the result of your conditioning. So when a law is applied, and whatever response is created, are generated, are extended by the people who are the recipient of that law, it is not because of any other thing, but because of the way they have been conditioned to respond. Conditioned to respond means they say that there is a classical conditioning and there is an operant conditioning. So sometime we learn that a particular initiative from the government or from a policy, what kind of reinforcement it is bringing. So sometime an act may result into a positive reinforcement and sometime it may result into negative reinforcement. Depending on the outcome of this reinforcement, your conditioning takes place. If you derive a positive reinforcement out of your deviant conduct, out of your wrong behavior, you are more likely to indulge in because you have got a positive reinforcement. And therefore the people who get success in crime, they continue to be in crime because of the positive reinforcement. When people start taking fruits or start taking mileages from crime, then a positive reinforcement happens because they can get away with crime. And therefore, they think that they can continue to get away with without being caught. And therefore, the whole research in criminology, especially in the realm of situational crime prevention, they said, crimes are difficult to commit. Crimes are easy to commit when they, give this kind of positive reinforcement. And therefore, I find a whole lot of material, confirming this entire thing. I also like to go to Kelsen, where he says, the purpose of law is to make social life possible. So he says that social function of law is to bring about certain mutual behavior of individual, to induce them to certain positive or negative behavior. And that is something Fuller also endorsed, where he says that the law for control or facilitation of human interaction framework. Now, how many of you think that law only creates some kind of constraints? So Fuller says, and also a very recent article, a very interesting framework is provided that I think we need to imbibe right here, because we generally miss this. Because the popular understanding suggests that law is to create certain constraints on the people so that they do not indulge into that kind of behavior. The alternative thought which is gaining ground is law also provides you a framework of interaction, how people have to behave in the society, how people have to interact mutually without interfering the autonomy or the privacy or the independence of other people. So in other words, law is not merely a kind of tool for punishment. It is also a kind of, it provides a framework for interaction to the people. I always say in my initial classes to the law student that the orthodox understanding about law continues to be like where we think law is a liability creating instrumentality. Now this focus has to be shifted to understand law is also a mechanism of conferring rights on the people. So from liability creating instrumentality to right conferring instrumentality. Something which we need to understand. Anyway, coming to this risk and reward you know, aspect of law, which is very important. So I was yesterday in a class and I was asking people, the students, I was teaching LLM class in criminal law, and they were in discussion on a very interesting 30-second thing I'll tell you. They were debating me the importance of criminal law in today's, especially in shaping the behavior of the people. I said, they were criticizing that law has stopped. We all criticize law is not working, criminal justice system is failing. These are the popular criticism. I gave just one example. I said, suppose tomorrow at 11 o'clock announcement comes to you that criminal law is suspended for half an hour and people might like to do whatever they like, they will not be liable. I said, by this example, you will understand the importance of criminal law. So sometimes we are law avoiding by virtue of recognizing the presence of the criminal law. So we calculate risk and reward, and therefore our behaviors are shaped. Still sometimes we choose, and whenever we calculate, we also calculate the opportunities. And that's why, you know, there is a thinking going on that crimes are easy to commit. When I say crimes are easy to commit, crimes are committed when they are easy to commit. Because people have a sort of calculus with them. And they calculate and they come to this understanding. So expected cost of behavior becomes very, very important. Now I'm coming to a very topical issue which has a very good interface with human behavior. Because nowadays two, three things are in active discussion. We are talking about criminalization and decriminalization very actively. We are saying that triple talaq has wrongly been criminalized. We are saying marital rape has to be criminalized. We are saying 377 should be decriminalized. We are saying gambling, individual drug consumption, all these things should be done away with from the. Now, question is, to what extent how the decision to criminalize is taken? Now, not much understanding is available on this subject, I'm telling you, in India. Therefore, we are not knowing which behavior is to be criminalized. And even the legislature and the people in the position of power are quite tentative about their decision to criminalize or decriminalize. And I'm telling you, there are very informed knowledge and wisdom with respect to this subject, and those principles are not being followed in this entire discourse. And therefore, you will find this entire terrain lacking very cogent argument. And this is something which I would urge that you please look at one very, very important publication which is very relevant to this particular theme. And that is all-time favorite book which I read and refer and speak. And probably because of that, I'm here today. And I'm very inclined and I'm thrilled about this particular book. And many of you must have read. The book is Why People Obey the Law. Why People Obey the Law. Tyler has written this book. You know, this book is a game changer. I'm telling you, if you read this book, I think you will justify yourself as a student or a scholar of law. Because it gives answer to many of the issues that you are trying to raise. Because a lot of literature is there which asks why people violate the law. But there are hardly any literature which talks about why people obey the law. Because obeying the law is all about the behavior that we are talking. And now what Tyler says, something he has done, a study in Chicago about the traffic violation by the people. It is an empirical study carried on to people about their decision to obey the law. So when people decide to obey the law, they are also guided by certain parameters and understanding and certain degree of morality in them. So what are that? This is something I wish to very briefly share with you. So interesting thing is the procedural justice. They say that generally we are very outcome-based people. That ultimately we look that if we follow or do not follow the law, what are going to be the outcomes for me? Tyler has contradicted this particular thesis. He said, people are more inclined, or they are more, you know, towards knowing the way they are treated in the system. They say if the procedure is held fair, they say if procedure is kept fair, they do not mind undergo any kind of punishment. So even when we think that if we violate a traffic rule, and we know that we have violated it, and we think that the traffic constable on the duty is right in his position, we are ready to pay that fine because we think that he has qualified the procedural requirement. So if we have that sense of following the procedural requirement, so if we have that sense that the procedural justice has happened, we do not mind the outcomes. So sometimes we may lose in terms of outcome, but we are fine because we know that procedure has been followed. Now, sanctity of procedure is very important. That's why we respect due process as against crime control model by Packer. You know? So there is a whole debate on that. Now, second thing in this is legitimate legal actors and institutions. Perception of legal system are shaped by people's everyday experiences with law through interaction with institutions such as police, traffic court, and other government agencies. And even where people have no direct personal experience with the legal system, nonetheless, they can readily observe the pervasive operation of legal institutions and authorities. The way in which the people experience the operation of law in their everyday lives gives rise to the perception about the legitimacy of the law and its actors and the institution. So if we have a sense of legitimacy and our perceptions are positive towards law and legal authorities, we are more likely to follow the law. If we have some doubt about the integrity of the legal authorities or the people who are manning the criminal law or any law, we probably refuse to. And therefore, that's why the sanctity of authority becomes a very important point. And also, this perception of legitimacy turns on the quality of treatment people receive from and observe on the part of legal actors. How are you treated? So suppose you go to the police station, or if you are undergoing some issue with the court, how the court is behaving, how the police is behaving, how the institutions of the state is, you know, they are behaving. That becomes something very, very important, because if you think that there is a suspicion or mistrust leading to the kind of unfairness, then people start, you know, posing doubt. And therefore, I say the capacity of law in impacting human behavior is directly proportionate to its intrinsic meaning to people and its statement. So what are the meanings that we derive from the law? Meaning derived from the law for the people, because ordinary people are not very well versed with the technical understanding of the law, but they do derive social meanings from law, and how those social meanings are decoded, that become crucial in the compliance of the law. Compliance of law is a very, very intricate matter, and therefore many people support law because of the statement made by the law. A very, you know, powerful writing by Sunstein from University of Pennsylvania. She has written a paper on expressive function of law. Please read this expressive function of law. So this paper says many people support law because of the statement made by the law. And disagreement about law are frequently debated over the expressive content of the law. Social meanings of regulations influencing human behavior are crucial in terms of compliance and identification of people. Now, you can see I'll just take a minute to give you a very simple example to substantiate this particular argument. I'm saying statement made by law. Please use it as a keyword, statement made by the law. Laws, that's what I say, law is a dead letter law. Unless it is infused with the proper context, that's why I'm saying contextualizing the law is a very, very interesting, you know, interaction. So I'm saying we have so many laws like Domestic Violence Act, we have Child Marriage Restraint Act, we have so many laws. What happens to these laws? How people, we have a question, because many people are saying Domestic Violence Prevention Act is not, you know, getting successful. What does it mean? What, Where do you account the failure of social legislation in this country? We have a lot of social legislation. Now, failure of social legislation is a serious issue, because the statements that people derive are the meaning that the people tend to derive from these legislations. Somehow they are not conforming to the people's expectations, and therefore people at large are not comfortable with many laws. So laws are there, but probably the meanings which are being derived from those laws are not somehow becoming justified in the eyes of the people. So ultimately, whose law is it anyway? I always say there are two types of law, state law and people's law. Most of the laws continue to be the state's law. I am talking about the entire movement has to be to make it people's law, because personhood is getting removed from the law, and that is the entire issue, that is the entire discussion. And therefore, I am saying that the law has a neutral content. Law has a neutral content, but law also has a contextual content. Now, when law is put into operation, it gives a contextual content also. Now, we are finding it difficult, or we are finding, many people find it difficult, that 498A should become applicable. They say that domestic violence is unnecessary intrusion into the privacy, because criminal law invades the privacy, criminal law takes away many, you know, freedoms which are guaranteed by the people. So now, what is our preparedness for that? So values held by law. We have to understand what are the values, or what kind of values are held by the law. If law is ensuring a value holding pattern in it, and people tend to subscribe those values, that law is more likely to be followed. Because certain laws, you need not to be a very coercive regime. They are automatically followed by the people. In the Western societies, you see the laws relating to environment, contract, property are easily followed without any coercive dimension, because people have internalized the norms which are the part of that law. So therefore, I am saying the law is both expressionist and consequentialist. Consequence of the law and expression of the law. And very important thing I am coming to underline is, at times the law has a potential to alter norms through legal expression. Now, sometimes people feel awkward or uncomfortable because law has a potential to change the norm which is widely held in the society. Now, sometimes there can be two consequences. Either if people feel that the law is very progressive, they can accept that law, despite the fact that law is not matching with the moral framework of the society. Now, so therefore, what is the alternative norm being suggested by this? Like, for instance, the people think that you can get away with crime, but alternative norm is saying that crime is always wrong. It isn't. Now, if people subscribe to this value which is intrinsic to the law, so we have to understand that people's behavior become very crucial in the light of this. And therefore, the extent to which the law shares social concern, it raises its potential to be complied by the people. Law's shaming effect has a value that makes people to follow the law. Now, have you ever thought of the shaming value of the law? Some laws may not be, you know, because I teach criminal law, so I come to criminal law side. You know, criminal law is a coercive declaration which makes you to, you know, follow the law. But in certain laws, the coercive force is not there, but there is a shaming effect. Like, for instance, at public places, at times you are hesitant to make litters. You know, you are not throwing anything away. Not because you believe in it, but you think that it will have a shaming effect. You may be looked down upon by others if you try to do that. So law invariably does this, where some shaming effect is exercised, and therefore feel it is a very pervasive pattern. So therefore, the principle, my next proposition is, You can alert me when my time is up. The principal aim of law is to change the behavior of an individual by changing the underlying morality of behavior. Now, this is the key provision, the key statement of this paper. The principal aim of the law is to change the behavior. Now, in nowhere we read that law has to change the behavior. But principal aim of the law is to change the behavior of an individual by changing the underlying morality of the behavior. So sometime you have to confront with the law because it is challenging the orthodox notions held by the people, which may be, quite not, in conformity with the morality held by the people. Like, for instance, earning money is a very important, expression of the people. But this kind of moral statement of the law does not recognize it, that you have to look at the balance between ends and means. So the legal sanctions which are accomplished the goals through fear of sanctions or rewards, they can also do so by changing the attitude about the regulated behavior. To the extent the legal system is perceived as promoting justice, people will more likely to complying with the law in a overarching sense. So if you have seen the Thibaut work on procedural justice, he is exactly trying to say. The perceived legitimacy of the law can be undercut and compliance undermined when the law fails to comport with the citizens' intuition of justice. So there is a community's sense of justice also. So whether law is matching to the community's sense of justice or not, it would also matter in the compliance. Because compliance is becoming a whole question. Because when we talk about human behavior, we are necessarily talking about the chances of law being obeyed. Now, one possible consequence is that the community's members who perceive the law as unjust are less likely to comply. Those laws which are considered to be unjust by the people are less likely to be complied. So we have thrown away so many unjust laws. We have thrown away many provisions in the law which are considered to be contrary to the fundamental freedoms guaranteed. Similarly, disaffected people who are deviating from the consensus, they are also the people who think that the society's sense is very different from the sense that law makes. Therefore, law as a source of moral guidance is a very, very important, aspect. I would only say that I have said that the abilities of the authorities to influence the personal cost of breaking the law, and also the compliance literature on this subject is full of two things, and I will close with that. They have recognized two types of things. One is internalized obligation. Sometimes the obligation is internalized, and therefore we become compliant to the law. So the first citizen may comply with the law because they view the legal authorities they are dealing with as having legitimate right to dictate their behavior. So people think that the authority has a legitimacy to dictate, and therefore the compliance is internalized. Second situation is internalized obligation. Internalized obligation is a situation where persons desire to behave in a way that accords with his own sense of morality. Sometimes people follow the law not because of any other reason, but because of their own sense of personal morality. Now, it is a very interesting terrain. I would urge the law student, before I close, two things. Number one, that whenever you need to look at the compliance of law, you have to necessarily go to the empirical research. Compliance cannot be studied. You look at Tyler's study, Why People Obey the Law. He reached to the people in understanding why people obey the law. You can do a small survey with the people who are paying fine very religiously without any resistance and try to decode their, expectation from the law. Why? Because majority of the people obey the law. So what is the theory informing behind the obeying part of the law? Because we are concerned with the violation, of course, that is very important. But why people obey the law continues to be a very, very important segment. And I think the student can undertake a very small survey on traffic violations and traffic obey. And then probably you can come out with so many behavioral dimensions which are the part of this entire discourse. So with this, I close, and I thank you for all time and your patient hearing. Thank you, Valentine.
Thank you, sir.